Hey there.
Good morning.
How's the first hour prep coming?
It's going well. Actually, maybe not as good as I hoped.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. The show's going to be great, but I guess I just feel like I'm in a creative funk.
You mean with the standard show setup, like what we do during the hours?
No, not so much with that stuff we're doing during the hours, but, you know, the intros.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'd love to break it up a little bit.
Well, we can definitely do that.
I know, but sometimes I can't get an idea off the ground.
Megan, you are the best producer in this business, but let me just say one other thing.
You can do anything you like on the radio. I can make magic on this mic.
Was weird. Very nice, but weird.
Why was it weird?
Because you just burst into song. And where did that piano music come from?
Well, I actually have no idea about that, but I figured that if it worked for Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling and La La Land...
Wait, I thought we agreed that that didn't totally work.
We did. Ambitious movie, good parts, maybe some parts that didn't quite come off. But I figured that if you can be walking down the street in L.A. and just burst into song... and music comes out of nowhere and everyone thinks it's normal, then why not here at WXXI?
Evan, you're wearing tap shoes.
I am? I guess I am. Let's see what these things can do.
Now this is really getting weird.
I thought the dance scenes in La La Land were actually some of the best parts. And hey, look who's also wearing tap shoes.
Where did these come from? What's going on here?
Come on, Meg. Let's see some moves. So good, Megan Mack.
I had no idea I could do that.
Eat your heart out, Emma Stone.
Listen, dancing is one thing, but do not ask me to sing.
I won't, but maybe you will by the end of this movie.
We're in a movie?
I actually honestly don't know anymore.
Every time you doubt yourself, just say, I'm making magic every day on XXI on the radio.
Oh, my thanks to our colleague Brenda Tremblay from Classical 91.5. I came in with this music in my mind this morning. She turned it into a song on piano. Great work, Brenda. And for me, yes, I'm in on the joke, everyone. Some people loved La La Land precisely because Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, you know, are just so singers. And maybe anyone can be in a musical. That's what Jack Garner's wife thinks. Well, not me, but we had fun with it. And that's the last you'll ever hear me sing on this program, I think. This hour, let's preview the Academy Awards from the films to the actors to the issues, including significantly more diversity on the list of nominees this year. My guests do include Jack Garner, longtime film critic who is not going to be rating my performance there, thankfully.
However, I'm going to put a bookmark on the podcast.
Hi, Jack. Nice to have you. Les Friedman's a professor and former chair of the Media and Society program at Hobart and William Smith College. Les, also lay off, man. I'm on the joke here, okay?
Thank you, Evan.
Oh, boy. Oh,
Evan.
All right. Okay. Yeah, you do have the bass going.
That's good.
Yeah, Jack does have the bass going.
I loved it.
Adam Libetow is film critic for City Newspaper. What part are you going to pick up there?
I will provide accompaniment on drums. I'm going to avoid the singing. I appreciate you didn't make me use any of my singing voice because nobody wants that.
Yeah, well, nice having you here as well, Adam. Now, Jack Garner, you told Helene B. and Dudi Hofer on Need to Know that whether or not it should win, La La Land is going to win Best Picture because Hollywood loves it some Hollywood, yes?
Yeah, they love it. It did really, in all honesty, it really did capture that myth of what everybody would like Hollywood to kind of be, you know? And I think that the Hollywood will love that about it, and also they'll love the gutsiness of making a movie, making a musical, just like a couple years ago they made that silent film, which has sort of been forgotten since. I mean, it sort of came and went. Those kinds of things happen, and I think some of the other films are going to sort of be tied at a group that are all sort of equal but good quality. I happen to think my favorite film of the year was Fences.
So you're getting ahead of yourself, Jack.
I'm sorry.
Peel it back. We got
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. In fact, so La La Land has a lot going for it, except the fact that, you know, as my wife said, she thinks that they purposely are just sort of average Joes singing because she wants you average Joes to believe they could be in a musical. I think that's a sweet reach by my sweet wife.
You told Helen B. and Duty Hofer, if I'm going to see me, I want to see Fred Astaire, not Joe Blow.
Yeah, right.
Well, let's listen to Sebastian and Mia. That's Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. We'll see if our other panelists agree on this. This is them singing City of Stars from La La Land.
City of stars, are you shining just for me? City of stars, there's so much that I can't see. Who knows? Is this the start of something wonderful and new? Or cannot make true.
City of stars, just one thing everybody wants. There in the bars, or through the smokescreen of the crowded restaurants. It's love. Yes, all we're looking for is love. Someone else.
A rush.
All right, that's Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. Les, you're not impressed, are you?
No, I think you sing as well. part of the issue. You know, it's interesting. I've changed on La La Land. We got done seeing it with my wife, and my wife said, oh, that's too slight a movie to win the Academy Award, isn't it? And, you know, you tend to forget that musicals are slight. Number one, and you also tend to forget that during the Depression, deep, dark Depression, musicals were the most popular genre around because they took people out of it. But we're not supposed to say what we think should win yet, right?
Well, we're going to get there.
Okay,
But bottom line is, you know,
It'll win. It'll win.
You think it will win.
Yeah, it'll win.
But you're not going to say it should win.
No.
Okay. Adam?
I'm on board with everything that's been said. It's a very likable movie, and I think the sort of rough around the edges singing sort of adds to that likable. You want to root for those crazy kids. But yeah, in the end, I thought it was a good movie. I think I did a like top 15 for City, and it made an honorable mention. It didn't even rank up there for me.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
And interestingly, to Jack's point on, you know, if you're going to see Singing and Dancing, you'd rather have Fred Astaire. The New York Times in their review said this was a case where the actual acting, Gosling and Emma Stone, and their chemistry when they're acting and not singing and dancing is good. But when they sing and dance, you know, it's sort of flat, which is the opposite of old school movies. You know, 40, 50 years ago, the singing and dancing might have been great. The acting, not so much. It's kind of on its head.
Well, except when you had somebody like a Natalie Wood or an Audrey Hepburn doing musicals, what you would do is you would have them sing, and that would be your demo tape that you would then take to Marnie Nixon, and she'd get another gig. Marnie Nixon was the famous voice of a million musicals but she was never seen on screen because they would want a strong voice, you know, in there. But that's a great point by the New York Times. They are better. They have a real charm, and you really like them together, and you kind of want them to win somehow. And So there's no denying that. And I also sort of like some of the dancing. I love that one dance by the park bench overlooking the city.
I do agree. To me, that was some of the most fun in the movie. The opening number for me was the most fun. I love the traffic jam.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Plus, didn't you want to know how they shut that
I
through?
I do.
Because, you know, that wasn't... I thought maybe it was a part under construction. No.
No, yeah,
it's a real honest-to-goodness freeway, and they really shut it down. They must have wanted to hang people in LA.
Yeah, they shut it down. Yeah.
And Megan Mack pointed out, that was one camera shot. That whole scene.
It's brilliant.
So that one, there was a little bit of trickery going on. So there's, it's cut together. But the park bench scene, that's actually one take.
It is a one take. I wondered about, because you know, where we all learn that you can do it and fake it today is Birdman. Birdman of Alcatraz had a Birdman of Alcatraz.
Dating yourself.
But Birdman had the whole movie was like one long take, mm-hmm. and yet they now have ways to meld takes together where you don't see the meld.
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure how
they
do
it together.
And so, but I am happy to hear that one on the bench was really what it was, because it sure looks great that way.
And if
it
you want to see an authentic, I don't say authentic, not that La La Land wasn't authentic, but do you want to see 1964 Umbrellas of Cherbourg? Is that, is that kind of example that this is paying homage to?
I think so, especially the ending. There are a lot of similarities there. The Jacques Demy film.
Okay, so everybody agrees here, and listeners, maybe you disagree. Maybe you saw La La Land and you think it should win. Or if you want to join the conversation about other films that are on the list that we're going to be working through, or other categories as we preview the Academy Awards, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Jack, then go ahead and go first, because you already did. The movie that you think should win is?
Fences. I think Fences is a classic on a par with Death of a Salesman of the black community. I think it's a great, great film. And I know it's a play, but then so were so many others that were made over the years, and so others were books. I mean, I don't care about the source material. The fact remains, on one good day in the theaters of America, more people will see Fences than saw the entire Broadway run. It's just the math is that way. And so the fact that more people can see this great play, and the acting is unbelievable. I think Denzel's never been better, and Viola Davis is stunning. That's the one category, by the way, that you can bet the house on.
Yep.
Viola Davis will win supporting actress, hands down. Not even close.
Okay, but that would be your best picture choice. Fences, how did you feel about it, Les?
You know, I love the acting. I didn't think it was a great movie. I'm sorry, Jack.
No, that's
right. I for a long time I thought Casey Affleck was a lock, but I don't anymore. I think Denzel should and would win, and I think Viola Davis is a lock. I'm going to go with the controversial pick. I mean, I've seen almost everything that's been out there except Jackie, and I didn't see Hacksaw Ridge for personal reasons, but I like Manchester by the Sea. I know it's the controversial choice, but it's the film that has stuck with me.
I've got a couple clips from that. Before we get to that, Adam, on Fences, where did it rank for you?
I thought it was a very good film. Yeah, I think it's more a triumph of the acting and the writing than anything else. And yeah, I absolutely agree. I think Denzel is worthy of winning, although Casey Affleck was also one of the best performances this year.
Well, let me read an email from a listener named Deborah. I got it this morning. She says, I have seen more films this year due to the diversity. I am a white 65-year-old woman who likes films about diverse people, and this year has been a jackpot and hopefully not a fluke. I have never seen as many films as I have this year.
You know, I want to say something about this. I've been asked to do a panel, a presentation with some people in Chicago on aging in the cinema. Now, I don't know why they asked me to do that.
A young man like
yeah.
you.
Yeah, a young man like me. Yeah. But nonetheless, they have. So I've looked at some demographics, theater demographics that the MPAA puts out. The two largest growths in audience demographics. Now, it's still dominated by the middle, 18-25, but the largest growths have been under 17 and over 50. So you look at the over 50, and this woman is a good example. Why is that growing? Well, number one, they have money. Number two, they have time often. And number three, they have, like Jack and I, not this young man over here, have the movie-going habit. They've been to the movies since the 60s. So that area, I mean, one of the things, not in this show, but we could talk about another time, is all the films about aging protagonists mm-hmm. that have come out over the last year or two, because they're going to that audience as well.
And the young audience, I think, is because of the great growth, animation. The great growth in animation.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's where the kids are going.
Absolutely.
You agree with that, Adam?
Yeah, I think so. I think the additional diversity puts more kinds of stories out there, and I think that encourages different kinds of audience to then go out and seek those films.
Well, and I'm going to key in on one thing Deborah said. I hope this year has not been a fluke. I mean, everything last year with Oscar So White and the deserving criticism that the Academy and Hollywood took for that, I think Deborah is at least wise to be cautious that this isn't a make goods kind of a situation.
Well,
but let's hope not.
It's, you know what, first of all, it was not a plot by anybody to plop a lot of black film out there. What happens is, because they're all made at different speeds and different times, so it took a long time to get Fences made. They're in the pipeline a long time, whatever it takes. So the stars simply aligned this year to say to the world, hey, there's all sorts of films and all sorts of filmmakers out there, and let's celebrate that. And we would hope it would keep going in some ways. There are certain actors who are going to make something out of these movies, like the young man who starred in Moonlight, who's going to probably win an Oscar supporting actor. And you have all that going on, and so that's great. So we'll have to see whether the diversity continues. I would hope it would. And the other thing that's important is a movie like, I'm having a brain burp here. The space movie. The
Women. Arrival.
Hidden Figures. Hidden Figures, about three black mathematicians.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Is a hit. It's a hit. So, black, white, brown, yellow are not as important to Hollywood as green.
Right.
And the fact that Hidden Figures made money is a great sign.
Yeah, I took a little look at the box office, and anybody out there who wants to ever see box office, just go to Mojo and it'll give it to you. Hidden Figures, of all the films nominated, has made the most money, over $146 million. La La Land, $35 million. And then there's a drop-off, Fences at $55 million, Lion, $38 million. Jackie, 13. Oh, Hacksaw Ridge made $66 million. But those two films, which couldn't be more different, by the way, Hidden Figures and La La Land, they are the top grossing film. But the fact that Hidden Figures has made this phenomenon. When I saw Hidden Figures, I don't know when you guys saw it. When I saw it, the audience applauded twice. Once at the end of the film, and I was out at a 420 show at Pittsford, which will show you how sad my life is. and the audience applauded when the film ended, and when the real pictures came up of the real women, they applauded again.
Wow.
Some of that could just be that the word has gotten out that it's an uplifting film, and people like uplifting, and there's not a lot of it going around this time of year. I mean, Manchester, as great as it is, you have to be ready for a serious downer.
All right, so before we get to Manchester, since we moved to Hidden Figures, let's listen to at least a clip here. This is from Hidden Figures. Carl Zielinski, played by Oleg Krupa, tells Mary Jackson there is an opening in the engineering program. Let's listen.
There is another opening in the engineer training program. A person with engineer's mind should be an engineer. You can't be a computer the rest of your life.
Mr. Zielinski, I'm a Negro woman. I'm not going to entertain the impossible.
And I'm a Polish Jew whose parents died in a Nazi prison camp. Now I'm standing beneath a spaceship that's going to carry an astronaut to the stars. Let me ask you, if you were a white male, would you wish to be an engineer?
I wouldn't have to. I'd already be one.
Wow.
Yeah. She, by the way, should have gotten an Oscar nomination. Yeah. That's the great loss this year. Yeah. Instead, Octavia Spencer, everybody loves Octavia Spencer, mm-hmm. and she was good, but this was the one that did it, this woman.
And Adam, weigh in on Hidden Figures here, how you felt about it.
I thought it was a really good, really solidly made sort of mm-hmm. feel-good, crowd-pleasing film, and I feel like that has a lot to do with why it was a success, the type of movie it is, as much as the diversity of its story. And that's sort of one of the good things about the Oscars, that they recognize films that aren't as necessarily immediately crowd-pleasing, that are a little more challenging and difficult. And so, for crowd-pleasing Hidden Figures, studios are sort of get the incentive to the money incentive to make stories like that. But the Oscars ad for something like Fences or Moonlight, they have that additional prestige incentive outside of just the bottom line.
All right, let's listen to a clip from Manchester by the Sea then, because that's another one that has already come up here. And I know that there's been some controversy over Casey Affleck. But this is a scene with Lee Chandler, played by Casey Affleck, learning he is the legal guardian of his nephew. Let's listen.
I don't understand.
Which part are you having trouble with?
Well, I can't be his guardian.
Well,
I mean, I can't.
Well, naturally, I assumed Joe had discussed all this with you.
No. He didn't. No.
I sorry, I have to say I'm somewhat taken aback.
He can't live with me. I live in one room.
Well, but Joe has provided for Patrick's upkeep. Food, clothes, etc. And the house and the boat are owned outright.
I can't commute from Boston every day until he turns 18.
I think the idea was that you would relocate.
Relocate to where?
Well, if you look, it's just, well, as you can see, you know, your brother worked everything out extremely carefully.
He can't have meant that.
It's Casey Affleck in Manchester by the Sea. Adam, what's the brief outline of the plot for people who haven't seen it?
Casey Affleck is a janitor in Boston who learns that his brother, played by Kyle Chandler, has passed away. And when he goes back to sort of take care of things, he learns that he has been given custody of his nephew. And you sort of find out Casey Affleck's character's background and sort of why he doesn't really want that responsibility.
How'd the film rank for you this year?
It ranked just behind my favorite film, which was Moonlight. It was my number two. I thought it was just a fantastic film, really well written and
Casey
incredibly acted.
Casey was originally probably the front runner for the acting until Denzel's kind of gained on him. And my feeling on that is that it is as it should be, not because of Casey's little whatever that problem is that he has. He's got some sort of background problem, baggage. But other than that, he also, to my mind, it's really just a one-note performance. It's a very good note. He has it right, but it's still only one. And Denzel's all over the emotional landscape. So that's why, you know, I like Denzel better for best actor.
Okay, Les?
No, I don't disagree. You know, Affleck, we were talking about this before the show, Evan, that can you separate the dancer from the dance? Do you separate the artist? I mean, it's an issue with Woody Allen. It goes back to silent film Fatty Arbuckle and all sorts of stuff. And Affleck was sued for sexual harassment by two women while he was making this weird documentary about his then brother-in-law, Joaquin Phoenix, called I'm Still Here. And he paid off, and that was that. But the irony is that Nate Parker, who also had an issue, this time a criminal issue, in Birth of a Nation with a sexual assault, a rape, that took that film and Nate Parker out of the competition. So what people are saying is, oh, yeah, you punish the black guy, but you let the white guy skate. Now, that's a serious issue. I don't know if we want to talk about this on a feel-good show, but that's a serious issue. And I mean, bad people can make great movies, you know, or great art. So you're really in a problem area here.
And I think different people are going to make different decisions on whether they want to support different art.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, there are going to be people who say, I'm not going to see any Casey Affleck movie. And I understand it.
Well, I don't see any, I don't see any Mel Brooks. I see a lot of Mel Brooks movies, actually, but I don't see any Mel Gibson movie. If I'm going to go to a Mel Gibson, because I think he's anti-Semitic, but that's just me. But if I have to go to a Mel Gibson movie, I buy a ticket to another movie, and then I go see the Mel Gibson movie. I don't give Mel Gibson money.
And yeah, that's...
Go ahead, then.
Separating art from artist, I mean, I absolutely understand that, but I feel like that's easier said than done. Because as you said, that everyone has different lines that they draw, and it's so personal and so subjective that it sort of lends itself to being hypocritical, like, because everyone has a different litmus test of what that's okay and that's not. And I don't fault anyone for saying, you know, I don't want to support somebody who's been accused of sexual harassment or, obviously, in the case of Nate Parker, accused of rape. And yeah, I think that's absolutely valid, but it's tough.
There could also be something else at play here, and it just might simply be the fact that we're upon the time of a new American wave of filmmakers. Because think about this, Clint Eastwood, Martin Scorsese, Steven Spielberg, Robert Zemeckis, Oliver Stone, and Woody Allen all made good to at least passable films this year, and they would usually be the guys crowding the podium, mm-hmm. and not one of them got nominated.
Good point.
I mean, their films like, you know, Clint Eastwood's Sully got ignored, Martin Scorsese's Silence got ignored, Spielberg's BFG got ignored. So, you know, you can go on down the line. Instead, we now have a bunch of people who we have to learn some new names. Mm-hmm. Damien Chazelle. I'm still working on the pronunciation of Denis Villeneuve. Arrival? I don't know. You don't. Nobody else knows either, right?
I want to say Denis Villeneuve, but that might just be me. I don't know if that's right.
And Barry Jenkins, we can pronounce it, but I don't know who he is, of Moonlight. Yeah. So you have all these, you know, Kenneth Lonergan's a veteran, but of independent cinema. Interestingly enough, is that the guy, unless you'll find that, I'm sure you find this interesting, the one veteran who got nominated is the guy who a month ago couldn't call a cab in Beverly Hills.
I know.
And that was Mel Gibson. Got nominated for Hacksaw Ridge. Kind of unusual.
Yep.
All right, let me grab a phone call. Karen in Caledonia, first up on the phones. Go ahead, Karen.
Hey, I just wanted to tell you guys, I was pretty offended by your calling the Hidden Figures movie a feel-good movie and referring to it as about black people at NASA. You know, this was a story about black women at NASA who contributed enormously to the success of our space program. And, you know, I'm not a person of color, but I think anybody who is a person of color watching that movie would have felt an affinity and a commonality of any experience that they had. Because I can tell you, as a woman of a certain age, I watched that movie last night and had so many moments of memory of similar experiences of being the only woman in a room in a professional setting and, you know, and experiencing those pressures. And that wasn't about being of color. That was about being a woman. Right. And so for you guys to kind of write it off as a happy, feel-good movie is really offensive to me. The fact of the matter is, you know, for anybody who's now wearing a tie and a pocket protector who is not seeing in that movie their own personal struggle, it's not about feel-good. It's about truth. I mean, if you want to say Oscar So White is not happening this year, then Hidden Figures is the movie that shows it.
All right, Karen.
It shows how far we've come in our country, and it's not just feel good. I mean, I did feel good, and we were super happy, but it's because people did what those women did and stood up to things, and we have to continue to stand up to things when they're wrong. So it's more than just feel good.
All right, Karen, thank you for the phone call. I did not see that film. I haven't seen a lot of the films on this list, so I'm letting the panel talk there, but let me just go around. Adam, I'll start with you. Go ahead. What do you think?
I agree with what she's saying, but I don't feel good to me isn't a criticism or a ding against it.
I didn't hear the word happy. I mean, it doesn't mean happy.
No, not happy. And I think it's about, as she said, celebrating these women, and it's inspirational. And so that lends itself to a feel-good feeling when you're done watching it, and that's sort of the intended purpose of it.
Yeah, I mean, I was happy to learn their story, and that made me feel good. Yeah. But I don't belittle that. I praise it. I think it's a wonderful thing. I do want to say on one point about being a woman's story and not a woman of color story. If it's not a woman of color story, why was a very, very big point of this movie that she had to walk 2 miles to find a bathroom she could use? So I'm just saying it was both.
Yeah,
it's both women and black skin folks, mm-hmm. and so but I thought it was a very powerful film. I have no arguing with you generally. No.
Okay.
No, I you know, my wife is a woman of a certain age. I'm sure she'll be happy listening to hear me say that, but she's a doctor, and she talks about being one of two out of 150 in medical school, and now of course 50% of the or more of the medical class. So I've heard these stories for years, and one of the things that stunned me about that movie, and I think inspirational is the right word that he used, one of the things that stunned me about that movie was we didn't know about it.
Yeah.
We didn't know about these women, and that was just gobsmacked me to understand that.
And you know what, and to Karen's point there, the fact that it took this film for us to get this story is a sign of, I think to Karen's point, understanding the pain that it goes through, feeling either erasure or just left out of history, stories untold. So, Karen, I really appreciate that phone call. Thank you very much. And we're late for our only break of the hour. We're going to come back and continue down the list of best picture candidates. We're also going to talk about some of the other categories. Jack Garner, longtime film critic. Les Friedman, professor and former chair of the Media and Society Program at Hobart and William Smith College. Adam Lubitau, film critic for City Newspaper. And we'll take some more of your phone calls as well after this live break here on Connections. I say live because let me tell you what's coming up on Monday. We're going to talk to a New York Times reporter who wrote a piece on the American electrical grid that opened my eyes in ways you want to understand how the grid works, how our energy system works. It was really remarkable. We're going to talk to her and Suzanne Hunt from Hunt Global Green, who helped consult on that piece and had some things to say about what's next in energy. So in the second hour, we're talking to the author of a book called Glass House on the Decay of Lancaster, Ohio, and the Loss of Industry. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Bill in Brighton is next on the phones. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you very much. Just on another subject, you have to admire, especially when you look at all her other great, great talents, the incredible expanded talent of Meryl Streep, the Florence Foster Jenkins, and by the way, I'm old enough, so I played the original recordings on a wind-up Victrola in the Adirondacks 30 years ago. But the comedy of intentionally, this is her own voice, she's intentionally trying to sing off pitch. And believe it or not, as funny as it is, her singing is far better than Florence Foster Jenkins' singing. But what I'm getting at is the gigantic nature of this incredible talent of Meryl Streep. I hope, I know she won't win the Best Actress Award, but what a talent. And a quick shout out to Jack Garner. One of the best movies of all times was The Pawnbroker, and he and I and a couple others only remember what it was. Oh, my best.
I know, I love that movie too.
Thank you, Bill. So, who's going to win Best Actress here? Bill, among other things, was talking about Meryl Streep and
this is her 20th nomination.
20th?
20th. So she's got that going against her in a way. I mean, you can only go to the well so many times. There is a theory I heard, an interesting little theory. The Golden Globe speech, for which there are some people loved and other people hated, her political speech, came about only a day or two before they closed the voting for the Oscars. And there were some people who thought that she may get an upsweep in vote by people who want to hear her speak again. So I don't know whether that'll happen, but I think it won't be her that wins, I don't think. I think it'll be Emma Stone, probably. But that'll be a good sign,
Emma
by
Stone's going to win for La La Land?
Oh, yeah. We all think that.
Do any of you think she should?
Well, I think the outside, I think the dark horse here is Isabelle Huppert.
Or Natalie Portman.
Portman. Yeah, I think those are the dark horses.
But you all think Emma Stone's going to win.
Yeah.
Do you think she should, Adam?
To me, she was one of the best parts of the film. I admired her performance in it. So of the things that La La Land is going to win on Oscar night,
question at all.
But that's how I'm
good
answering.
Job,
Senator,
good
Senator
job.
Lubitau, the committee will ask you to answer that question again and direct your attention to the, should she win?
I would probably put, for my vote, it would be Isabelle Huppert.
Okay, Les, should she win?
No, I would do Isabelle Huppert.
Okay.
I also love Isabelle Huppert, but I think I might even go for Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
She was incredibly great in a so-so movie. She captured Jackie Kennedy like you can't believe.
Worth seeing because of her?
Yeah. If you remember that accent that Jackie had that we never knew where it was from? Ooh. Was it from Mars? Where was this from? and then on top of that, she had that breathy way of talking like Marilyn Monroe. Like, oh, I'm talking like this, breathy. Anyway, Natalie Portman, much better than I just did, does that voice incredibly well. So yeah, and she's also the emotional element. This is Jackie finding out how to be a rock at this incredibly bottom part of her life. I mean, the floor is falling out from underneath her.
Mm-hmm. And one of the problems is the actress category this year is, I think, particularly strong.
Right.
I think every one of the performances in there deserve it, and I could probably make up another
category. Amy Adams.
Separate.
Amy Adams. Her Arrival didn't even get nominated.
Yeah, I would put Annette Bening, 20th Century Women, in there. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Sure. I thought Bening would be nominated.
I do too.
Yeah, should be nominated.
Sad that she didn't make the cut.
Okay, so since we just did on the actress side, why don't we just do actor? And I've heard already here, actor in a leading role is going to go to Denzel Washington, Jack says.
I do.
I do too.
Les says yes.
Yep. Yeah.
Denzel. Everybody says Denzel's going to hit. And he's won before, right?
Yeah. Two times.
He's won two times. Oh,
well, one for support and then in Glory. And then once for a very Training weird Day. Choice. Training Day Training was a Day. Weird. Just your basic cop movie. And
yeah, why? But he's fabulous in this movie. I was amazed.
If he doesn't win, it will be
Casey Affleck.
Casey Affleck.
That would be very controversial, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. You know, it would not be Vigo. Andrew Garfield had two real interesting performances, but I don't see that happening. Yeah. Ryan Gosling, again, if there's a big, big La La Land snowball, he could get caught up in it.
Mm-hmm. You think? Oh, my gosh.
I'm just saying, it depends how big the snowball is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's listen to a clip from the movie Moonlight, which is for you, Adam.
Yeah, that, best film of the year.
That's the best film of the year. We're going to listen to 9-year-old Chiron asking Juan, played by Mahershala Ali. And in this clip, you're going to hear, I think, a little bit of coarsest language, but, you know, just be ready for that. Juan's a drug dealer and has taken on a father figure role for Chiron. Chiron's mother called him, and again, I'm quoting from the film, called him a faggot. So the question is, what does that mean? Again, there's some coarse language here. Let's listen.
What's a faggot?
A faggot is a word used to make gay people feel bad.
Am I a faggot?
No. You could be gay, but you never let nobody call you no faggot. Unless.
How do I know?
Just do. Think.
You know, you know.
Hey. You gotta know right now.
That's from Moonlight. Adam, why is that the best film of the year to you?
It's just a beautiful story, incredibly well directed and acted by an ensemble, really, of really talented actors. Since it's told the life of Chiron, a young black man, picking up with him at three different points in his life, childhood, adolescence, and then as an adult, and especially the performances of the three actors playing Chiron. You watch this film and they don't really look anything alike, but they're able to sort of, through their performance, create that connective tissue and make you believe it's one man.
Mm. It is a great film. I mean, the more I think about it, it would be very close to my second favorite, I think. It would be my second favorite, very close to the top.
But none of you think it has a chance to win, is that correct?
No, I don't know.
I don't know. I think Hidden Figures has more of a chance to win. Then does this. This is a tough film.
It is.
You know, I think Ali will win, but I want to say here, because it'll get lost in our discussion because it's going to win nothing, I must tell you that one of the surprise joys of the summer for me was watching Jeff Bridges in Hell or High Water. Yeah. I thought that was a really good film. I remember walking out of that theater, someone had told me about it, and thinking, God, I'm so sad no one's ever going to see this film because it's really a good film.
In fact, I hope it wins the original screenplay, which is where, you know, sometimes they find ways to honor films.
Yeah.
And that would be a good way to honor this film because it is extremely well written. I mean, the dialogue in it is fabulous. It's a Western, modern day Western, and I like it a lot, but it will not win Best Picture, but it could win Best Screenplay.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
All right, so we've worked our way through most of the films. So I do want to mention that Jack Garner told my colleague, Helen B. and Duty Hofer, that you at least appreciated about Arrival, which is not going to win Best Picture, but is nominated, that it was kind of a new twist on the alien genre, a more philosophical twist. Right, did you like that part?
I liked that part very much. It actually goes around to the point, without giving too much away, but it changes her the way that she actually leaves her. In other words, we lead our lives in a flat, literal way. I mean, and this has her sort of time tripping within herself. It's hard to, I can't explain it.
No.
You know, you always know what I'm saying if you saw the movie, right?
Right,
but it's hard to explain. But it, you know, and then you discover certain things about her life that you didn't know earlier, and it's And it's just, it's much more philosophical than any other space movie I've ever seen, even Close Encounters, which is probably the second best.
Right. Okay, Les?
You know, I wasn't crazy about it, but but I do want to shift and say we shouldn't, I hope we have time to talk about Lion.
That was next on the list.
Good. Okay.
So go,
you're always
go right
a
ahead.
Step ahead of us.
Well, you know, that's my job, Les.
Yeah.
No, Lion I've heard is fabulous, and the only complaint I've heard, and we'll see what you guys think, is that, as I understand it, having not seen it, it's telling first the child portion of the story and then the adult portion of the same person. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that the first half was absolutely dazzling. The second half, occasionally clumsy. That was the one complaint that I heard in several sources. But most of what I've heard is just it is flat out great and you will absolutely cry. Get ready for a deluge of emotion. Les, I mean, tell me about Lion.
No, I think you're right. I think that critique is reasonable. I thought Dev Patel was great. I think actually he is a very good actor. I've seen him in several things now, and I thought the movie was very moving, and I thought it worked extremely well. I don't think it's going to win anything, but I think it has a right to be there.
What's the story, by the way, for people who haven't seen
it? It's a kid who in India, a very poor kid from a very poor family.
And only about four.
Yeah, and he gets separated, and it's amazing what he goes through, this kid, how he survives on the streets. And he goes through this period, and eventually, without boring you, he gets adopted by a very kindly Australian couple, and he is an accomplished kid, and he grows up in Australia, and he starts wondering what happened to the family he left in India. And it becomes an obsession that almost destroys his life. And he sets out to find them, and of course, spoiler alert, he does.
It's, by the way, a huge, wonderful ad for Google Earth.
Yes, it is. That's how
Google
I find it.
But I don't mind. I mean, if you're going to have a product placement, this is beautifully done.
This is beautiful.
But it's... But yeah, here's this word uplifting again. I mean, mm-hmm. It is also an uplifting film.
And yet super emotional, right?
Oh, yeah. That's uplifting is emotional.
Okay.
You don't only cry. I mean, I think guys, I've always had a theory that men and women cry at different things in movies. Women cry at really bad, tough, horrible situations.
Jack, be careful here. Go ahead.
Men can't do that because it's not manly. You know, we have to tough it out. But we cry at feel-good moments.
My man, I will cry at movies, okay?
But don't you cry. I mean, I
cried at the end of La La Land because I'm like, that was way too long. Much of my life.
I think the all-time male crier is when the father looks down the base path at his son in the
Field of Dreams
and says, you want to play catch.
Okay.
I get goosebumps thinking about that.
We're going to put this on hold for 1 second. Because Jack just opened a little bit of an interesting can of worms, but I want to ask Adam what you thought of Lion.
I actually agree with the criticisms. The first section and the kid who plays the main character there, Sonny Pawar is the young actor who is, I think, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And that section is fantastic. And the end, I mean, you have to kind of be made of stone to not be emotionally affected by that. But the middle section, I thought, was kind of a mess and I had some problems with and dragged and I wasn't a big fan of.
Does Lion have a chance to win?
No.
Everybody's saying no.
No, it's got it's already won what it's going to win.
That's right.
Now, you brought up Field of Dreams. I'm only going to bring this up because a couple of weeks from now, we're going to put together a panel to talk about movies that haven't held up that were either loved at the time or critically reviewed at the time, but for reasons of, you know, sort of cultural taboo that we look back at. I'll give you an example. Breakfast at Tiffany's. You look at, you know,
Mickey Japanese guys always bother me.
Just a disaster.
Hold up.
You know, just embarrassing. But Craig Calcaterra, who's a baseball writer, ripped Field of Dreams recently.
No.
And what he said was, first of all, he said the relationship between Ray and his dad, super thin. All we know is that his dad was upset that his son didn't like his favorite baseball player and they became estranged. What kind of terrible relationship. And the moral of the story is that the son has to make good for that. It's not the dad's fault, it's the son. And by the way, James Earl Jones plays a really interesting progressive black writer from the 60s at his heyday, and yet he somehow falls in love with this 19-teens era team during which African Americans and people of color were still banned from the game, and he's got no problem with that.
You forgot the most important thing. Shoeless Joe Jackson was left-handed, not right-handed.
Okay, well, there was that as well.
You're right. You're
and
right.
Craig Calcaterra mentions that. Yeah. But he says if you look at it from that from the racial lens and from the moral lens, it doesn't hold up. It's interesting.
Right.
Because that's a beloved movie.
Right.
So I'll just ask you real quickly. I mean, Les, you shot up in your seat when I said movies that don't hold up. Is there one to you that stands out?
MASH. MASH doesn't hold up for me. It is and I love that movie when it came out. I teach a course on the 70s, so I often show it. It is so sexist. You just can't get past it anymore with what they do to Hot Lips early on. So that to me doesn't hold up anymore.
Okay, well.
That's a great panel. We all volunteer.
You'd all like to be here.
We
We're going
like
to do that a couple weeks after the Oscars to talk about that. And we need some time to think about it. But it is interesting over time to see how cultural changes happen and and how that impacts the way we perceive
movies. By the way, it works the other way, Evan, too. You know, films that we were talking about The Searchers earlier.
Yeah.
That was not a hit when it 1956. And it's become a classic.
The last time they did the Sight and Sound Critics Poll, which is considered the most important one, it was the only Western to crack the top 10, and which makes it the greatest Western of all time.
Not Unforgiven wasn't in there. So there are films that were ignored, and we could go through the list, by the way, if we had a whole other hour, of films the Oscars ignored. Casablanca, I mean, just go through it, of all the great films. And Casablanca is another example of a film that was seen as a studio film, nothing big, nothing important.
Well, I think it's been loved for a long time.
Oh, but it's been loved.
Yeah.
All right, so we've talked a lot about all the categories. The one we haven't get is...
Director.
Let's do these. We've done actor in a supporting role. You all think it's going to be Mahershala Ali, yes?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Actress in a supporting role, you think it's going to be Viola Davis?
Bet the house.
So bet the house on that.
It's a lock. Yeah.
Okay. Director is going to be...
I think it's going to be La La Land. Even if La La Land somehow doesn't win Best Picture, I still think it's going to be Damien Chazelle just for the audacity of making this movie.
Right, me too.
Yeah I agree. I would love for a split to happen with Barry Jenkins getting director and La La Land picture, since I think that's a foregone conclusion. But I do think it's going to be Damien Chazelle.
Okay, and that opens up a chance to talk about anything that we have missed. Adam Lubitau actually had a kind of a column of your favorites, all the way down to breakout stars and things like that. Your breakout star of the year is Black Phillip from The Witch.
Yes.
Tell me why.
The Witch was a film released...
we don't know what it is.
The old
kids loved it.
I think this is a young old deal.
Yeah, we don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, it's... horror film about a Puritan family.
Which actually got really good critical reviews, did it not?
Yeah, it was fantastic. On my best of the year list, it was number two for
Holy
me.
Mackerel.
Your life is worse than mine.
Les, you may be missing things.
I think so.
All right, so Black Phillip is who in this?
Is the family goat who causes mischief and has a role to play in the sort of undoing of the young daughter of the family. I don't want to say too much. Film that has to be seen.
It's a human being. It's a human being.
It's a goat.
You want to nominate
a
goat?
Goat.
You want to nominate goat as the breakthrough actor of the year?
So he's going to be in another movie? Goat 2, the sequel?
I hope so. I would see that film.
Holy mackerel. Now, to my mind, the breakthrough guy is Andrew Garfield.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. You know, with Hacksaw Ridge, which I know you haven't seen, but sneak into it sometime.
I will.
And Andrew Garfield nominated for...
Hacksaw Ridge.
Actor in a leading role.
And he was also in Silence, which is another very powerful film. I liked him better in Silence, but nobody saw Silence, at least not too many. I did.
Who is the, I'm going to just block on it, Chris, the guy who plays Captain Kirk?
Chris Pine.
Chris Pine was a revelation to me in Hell and High Water.
Oh, yeah.
I know he's known, but I think that really
showed
range.
And I also love Ben What's-His-Foot, the other brother. I've always liked him.
Ben Foster?
Ben Foster, yeah.
Yeah, I think Hell or High Water
if you take anything out of here, go rent Ben. That's on DVD now. Go rent it. Hell and High Water. If you can handle a little violence.
Okay, I was going to ask you, as we're down to our last 2 minutes then, films, whether they're on the nominated lists or not. You know, for Adam, it was The Witch. That's in your second best film of the year.
Yes.
What's another one that you would tell people go see, even if it's not on the lists?
I'm going to just keep digging myself a hole and also say Green Room, which was a thriller about a punk rock band that plays a gig at a bar owned by neo-Nazis and ends up locked in the green room and has to battle their way out.
Okay. Les?
I one of us is really having a rough time.
No, Les, no, you have to open your horizons. God, you understand?
Neo-Nazis? And, okay.
You never see Surf Nazis Must Die.
I have seen that.
Relevant now.
I have seen Surf Nazis Must Die. I think Hell and High Water. I mean, I think people should go rent that.
Okay.
And I just had it on my head, and then that joke just drove it right out of my head. Oh, the BFG.
The BFG?
Spielberg. Yeah, it's got a three thing over me. I really do admire Spielberg. I mean, I know it's become fashionable maybe to say, well, yeah, I don't know, but I think he's great. And then I also love Roald Dahl. I've always loved Roald Dahl's writing, and I also love that actor whose name escapes me right now, who won the Oscar a couple years ago for Bridge of Spies. Well, how can we forget his name already?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He won the Oscar. Come on, guys.
Somebody help me. I know who you mean. Mark Rylance.
Mark Rylance. Yes.
Thank you.
He stars in this thing. And
Kaboom!
So anyway, I like the
Justin,
BFG.
Justin, if you missed it, our panel has some disagreement, some agreement, but you can expect Best Picture. Jack says La La Land. Les says La La Land. Adam says La La Land. They're not saying it should. They're saying it will. And Jack, your one take it to the bank, if you're going to bet the house, you say Viola Davis for Fences.
For sure.
In a supporting role.
Bet
the house. You're saying that is the biggest lock.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Biggest lock, Adam.
I want to say the same thing.
It's okay.
I'm trying to come up with something else. No, yeah, Viola Davis, there's no question.
Okay.
No
yeah. Thanks, everyone. It's fun.
Ooh. Yeah, it was fun.
Goodbye.
Oh, no, we're not doing it. Jack Garner, Les Friedman, Adam Lubitow, thank you. Thanks for all being here and getting us ready for the Academy Awards this weekend. Our thanks to, I was going to call you Jack Garner. You're just John Andrus.
Hey.
John, the work back there, appreciate that. Megan Mack, producer, I'm Evan Dawson. Brenda Tremblay helping us out from down the hall, Classical 91.5. And a whole cast of folks here. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.